So we are holding and talking about this question of how Torah law and rabbinic law exist and coexist when they clash. Question?
Yeah.
Yes.
So we said yesterday, we were talking about that perhaps
the Rabbanan
could be mafkir.
Right, mafkir mamon, which we find.
But where would the Rabbanan get the power to be mafkir mamon? Was that a basic
Okay, that's a great question. That's something maybe we could also discuss separately. We know there is a klal that hefker bez din hefker, that Chazal have the ability, right, maybe if it's not even Chazal, could even be contemporary Rabbanan. We don't even know exactly the limits and the parameters of this. But we have the notion that Rabbanan of some sort and of some stature can declare mamon to either not belong to a specific individual or to be devoid of any value in of itself for all the ramifications that exist. It's a discussion. Can they only do that to negate status? Can they actually transfer mamon from one to another? There's a lot to say about hefker ben hefker. It is based on a pasuk. It's a discussion how exactly we know that. That's a worthy discussion to have. Might be probably a different topic, so we can spend some time on that if you like. For now, we know that the klal exists, and sometimes it comes in handy. So I'll just address for a moment, because maybe this is something we'll also explore a little bit in this context. So there is a question, and one of the things that Chazal seem to have done that apparently overrides Torah law, here's an example we haven't discussed yet, because looking at maybe getting around to this, is the concept of prizbul. Now, prizbul is a very often misunderstood concept and misinvoked. It's invoked very often to make a point that's not totally fair, because people get the impression that, oh, if prizbul exists, it means that the rabbis can essentially do whatever they want to get around Torah law. And anytime there's a Torah law that's not convenient, so they can, or I shouldn't say it so flippantly, but anything that's not, that has challenges involved, so then there is a mechanism to get around it. And how do we know that? Because the Torah says that if you have outstanding loans that are due to you, if you lend money to somebody and the Shemitah year passes, you're obligated to forget those loans. And yet, we have a concept, apparently a rabbinical innovation, called the prizbul that allows us to get around that. So there you see the rabbis are able to make this tool that can circumvent the Torah law, which would otherwise ask you to, otherwise command you to release loans. So there's a couple of problems with that premise, because we're not going to get to all of them now, but just to start with one major one, the Talmud says very clearly in Maseches Gittin that it's crucial that what we're talking about here is Shemitah D'Rabbanan. That because nowadays Shemitah is Midrabbanan and not Minhatorah, therefore we have prizbul. I'm phrasing that in a little bit of an ambiguous way, because you could interpret it to mean that prizbul only works because Shemitah is D'Rabbanan. Or some Rishonim might understand it to mean that it might even work on a level of Minhatorah, but we only utilize it because Shemitah is Drabbanan. So one way or another, but it's contingent on the fact that Shemitah is Drabbanan. So here's where the Gemara says, wait a minute, hold on a second. Shemitah is Drabbanan? How could that be? Shemitah is Karkos, okay. You're telling me that the rabbis made a rule that we shouldn't work the land, okay. But Shemitah is Ksafim? How could that be Drabbanan? Why should that bother us? Yeah? Oh, very good. So, as Chidravik points out, that maybe we have to worry that you're being told to violate an Isser D'Oraisa of Geneva, right? Or of Gezel, let's put it. Right? That here, you have money that belongs to somebody else. You, in this case, are the borrower now. Right? So you borrowed money, and you're not going to return the money. So if Shemitah is Din Menat Torah, okay, so that's the way it is. God said there's no more debt. But if it's a Din D'Rabbana, the rabbis can tell you not to pay back a loan? So why don't we just say, yeah, all right. Yesh koach lakir davar min haTorah. Why is that not an easy answer here? That's the subject that we're talking about. So why is that not an easy response to this question? Yes? Okay, so somebody's going to suffer because of it. That's true. But what else might be a problem here? Yes, Alex?
Not really a mitzvah aser.
Oh, right? Seems like this is a active violation of Torah law. Because isn't it lo sigzol? Isn't that an iser? Isn't that a lo sasek? So this goes to the question that we mentioned the other day, right? How do we categorize things? We say sheva al tasa. Does sheva al tasa mean that you are acting passively? Or does it mean that you are violating an asay, you're omitting an asay, rather than violating a los asay? So this would seem to be a example. Right? This would seem to be a situation where this is a nafkamina, because your behavior is passive. You're just not paying back a loan. But it's a violation of a los asay. So does the Yesh Koach work for this or not? So the Gemara actually has two answers to this question. I would have put this on the Marmar Komos, wasn't expecting to talk about it today, but it is relevant to your question. So there's a whole fascinating discussion we could have about this. Maybe we'll come back to it maybe on Monday. But one answer the Gemara gives is Sheva Al Tasa, and that's why it's okay. And there's a discussion to be had about whether or not that's makes a statement about how we define Sheva Al Tasa. Keep that in your back pocket, maybe we'll come back to it. And the other answer the Gemara gives, Rav and Abaye over there in Gittin, is Hefker Bezdin Hefker. So there it seems to suggest that when you have a monetary issue, Chazal essentially have extra latitude to address the facts on the ground and control the results. So here, even though you may have an issue of a los asay, depending on how you understand it, but because it's a monetary issue, so then Chazal's power is broader than it otherwise would be. And that's where we got that suggestion yesterday, that maybe that's also what's happening with sukkah. Chazal devalue the sukkah, so they no longer are valid for the fulfillment of the mitzvah. The Gemara also mentions this, for example, in Maseches Kiddushin and Maseches Ksubis, as a way that Chazal can undo a marriage. I mean, the concept of Afkeinu Rabbanan LeKiddushin Minei, where this question also comes up, that sometimes apparently it's possible for the rabbis to undo a marriage that's between a different man and a woman. And how do they do that? They're not a party to the picture. Because if it was Kedusha Kesef, and the Gemara says maybe it's specifically only going to work when it's Kedusha Kesef, or you'll have to have another approach for other situations, but assuming the Kedusha took place through the giving of money, so Chazal had the ability to turn off the switch of the funds to that coin, to that ring, and make it worthless, and boom, it's as if there was no Kesef Kedusha. So we find that whenever money is involved, Chazal have broader powers than the otherwise, and sometimes it's kind of a back door to make something happen. So it's a back door to deal with a lo sigzol question, because they don't have the power to tell you you're allowed to steal, but they have the power to redefine who owns what. They don't have the power necessarily to undo a marriage, except they have the power to cut it off by draining the Kesef Kedushin of any value. And maybe we mentioned a suggestion yesterday that they can take away your mitzvah of sukkah that way also. So in all of these cases, it's kind of a backdoor explanation that we can find a way to have Chazal address the situation from around without having to make the major leap and say that they actually can redefine Torah law. Yes?
It may not be worth going into,
mm-hmm.
but how can...
It's always worth the question is when.
Well, right.
Yes, okay.
But how can they say that it's not Kedusha Kesef and turn everything into P.S. and
yeah, the Gemara addresses that. Right. And the Gemara addresses also what if they did Kedusha Ebiya, and what's the effect of that. So the lot that is very worth exploring. It is a little bit of a extra avenue that maybe we'd have to push for a different time. It's a very fair question. Okay, the question also?
I thought the mechanism was different.
Okay, so again, there's more to say. If we were addressing Hefker Bezdin and Hefker head on, there'd be a lot more to say. It's just worth being aware of here because it impacts our sugya, because it provides these kind of backdoor approaches to a lot of the examples and keeps us from having to necessarily assume in each case that the rabbis were actually possessed of a power that may be broader. So, still, it may be the case. It may be that they can redefine Torah law. And we saw already some examples of this, most prominently in our own Masechta. So let me ask you like this. I'll mention, first of all, the other example that you've seen in the Makaros, which seems to be, in a sense, a unique example, an example that is different than all the examples that we see in the Gemara, and is one that is suggested in the Rishonim in a very controversial way. The Achronim were quite taken aback by this suggestion, even though it has almost no nafkamina whatsoever. But it still shook the world with its suggestion, even though it doesn't affect almost anything. I'll tell you why. But the first mission of Masechus Brachos tells us that there is a machlokas, when is the Zman of Kriyashma? For nighttime, Kriyashma Shel Arbus. So according to the first opinion, we don't follow it all. It goes only to the beginning of the night. But the next two opinions, Rabbi Gamliel and Chachamim, the Gemara, the Mishnah already tells us, they actually conceptually agree. That they agree that Min HaTorah, Kriya Shema can be recited all night. But the Chachamim had a belief that there is a Gezerah, that Kriya Shema on a Rabbanan level can only be recited until Chatzos. We didn't let you say, okay, it's 11:58, let me just watch the football game first, and when it's over, I'll say Kriya Shema then, but you have to get it done before Chatzos. So what impact does this have? So you saw the Rabbeinu Yonah, right? Rabbeinu Yonah has this radical statement that perhaps what it means is that Chazal were mafkia, using the power vested in them, by the idea of the Yeshkoach Laker Davar Min HaTorah, they neutralized the mitzvah after Chatzos. After Chatzos, it is no longer possible at all to fulfill the mitzvah of Kriya Shema. So this is quite radical. And Achronim such as the Shagas Aryeh, it's an early Achron, and more recently Rav Moshe Feinstein, and others in between, all took issue with this. They thought that it's a very difficult position to say. Now, why do I say it has almost no nafkamina? Because, well, first of all, we don't have a nafkamina anyway under most circumstances, because let's say you find yourself at 2 o'clock in the morning not having said Kriya Shema, you're going to say it anyway, because it's really a nafkamina for Shemayim. And if it's 10 o'clock at night, you shouldn't push it off, according to everybody. So it has very little nafkamina practically. But it has even less nafkamina than that, because the one who says this is the Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah, if I'm not mistaken, he says the halacha is like Rabbi Gamliel. He holds that the halacha is really that Kriya Shema is all night anyway. But he's saying the opinion that he doesn't paskin like, according to Chachamim, it happens to be a machlokas rishonim also, how we hold about whether a gezeira exists in the first place. Is there a gezeira? There's a parallel discussion you may be more familiar with from Pesach night than the Afikoman. Might be a similar structure. Maybe that also could be all night, but maybe there's the Gezeira of Chatzos. So it's Machlokes Rishonim, whether there, what, how do we paskin about Kriya Shema at night? So Ben Yonah's position is we hold like a Megamliel, it's all night. But he's saying the view that he doesn't hold like the Chachamim would have meant that the mitzvah is negated after that time. So he himself is not saying that there's any halacha that actually adopts his position. He's attributing that explanation to a view that he doesn't feel is practical halacha. So this has very little nafkamina in the real world. But in any event, so it was still a radical position. So this position is really different than any example we've seen so far. Right, can you tell me how? How is this example different than any other case that we've seen?
So this is like a time thing as opposed to like a definite action.
Okay.
So sukkah, it's not a matter of like, oh, well, the time passed to do sukkah. Okay,
right.
Right now, when you're doing sukkah, is this currently okay or not?
Okay. But how do we know that's a relevant distinction? Is that important? Is that is there any other difference you can think of? See, what's interesting, let's specifically contrast it with blowing shofar on Shabbos. How is this different? All right, what are we afraid when it comes to blowing shofar on Shabbos? Chazal, we're afraid of Chilul Shabbos. All right, so, yes?
Yeah? It doesn't sound like the Gezeira from Kriyat Shema is like Shema anything. It's not like there's a...
Okay, you're on the right track, yeah?
Like I'm saying, it's a din with Nas, so it's not like going to have any bearing on any other field.
Right, so that's, you're on the right track, you're right there. When it comes to blowing a shofar, we're worried about Chilul Shabbos. And we said, yeah, sacrifice your shofar, sacrifice your lulav for Shabbos, for the losase. Here, for its own mitzvah, we're trying to protect this mitzvah, and we're going to do so by depriving you of the mitzvah. It's a very and what exactly is the nature of that gezeirah? Is actually room to wonder. Are we saying that we'll make you lose out tonight because then it won't happen tomorrow night? When you realize that you missed it one night and you lost the mitzvah completely, so the next night, so we're going to sacrifice the mitzvah tonight on purpose so that you will not lose the next night? So presumably not. Presumably, it's like we just had a Yontif, we have Chol HaMoed, and we know there is the rabbinic prohibition of shaving and haircuts and the laundry on Chol HaMoed. So there is perhaps a similar kind of dynamic that we say, we don't want you waiting until then. So we'll say, you can't do it then. So you'll have to do it now. So with Kriyat Shema also, we don't want you waiting until 2 a.m. because that's dangerous, because then you may fall asleep and lose it completely. So we'll say, to make sure you don't wait till 2, we'll tell you can't even do it at 2. You have to do it before Chatzal. Shaykh, was that what you wanted to say? Israel, is that you?
I just had a question.
Yeah.
We know that by Kriya Shema, the Rabbana created a siyag.
Right.
Is the concept by shofar to not do a full shabbos, would you consider that a siyag also, or is that a different?
We consider it a siyag, but it's a different type. I mean, it's just interesting that the motivation is much more clearly understandable. And again, that may, we just said before, that's a topic I think we'll discuss at some more length, that particular gezeirah. But it's a very unusual application here to say we should sacrifice, if it means that we'll sacrifice tonight for tomorrow night, that's very surprising. We need to sacrifice the later zone of tonight so to make you get your act together earlier. It's still an unusual type of gezeirah, and it doesn't really match what we've seen so far. So that's a very interesting application. And it was very controversial. It was a topic of a lot of critique. So that's just interesting to be aware of. And he's clearly taking a strong side on this issue of whether Chazal can indeed redefine the performance of mitzvah. So let's also consider what we mentioned yesterday. So let's say the two examples which possibly have a difference between them. Let's say blowing shofar on Shabbos, or taking a lulav on Shabbos, or making kiddush in a way that is incomplete, or benching in a way that's incomplete, like we discussed yesterday at some length. Are those two comparable? Are they distinguished? And if so, how would you distinguish? If I were to say that one of them, the mitzvah is nullified, and the other, the mitzvah is not nullified, which one would you assign to which? So let's say benching and kiddush on the one category, right? Cases where there's a positive mitzvah where Chazal said do it in a more involved way, or a situation like shofar and lulav on Shabbos where Chazal said don't do this mitzvah at all because it's going to risk Chilul Shabbos. So I could ask you in both cases, if I made kiddush without makom suda, or if I blew shofar on Shabbos, in either case, did I do a mitzvah? Was I yotze kiddush min haTorah? Was I yotze lulav min haTorah? Is the same answer, would you think, what's most likely? Do you think there should be the same answer to both questions? Do you think there should be a different answer? And if you think it's a different answer, which one would you put in which category? And I'll give you a hint, there are achronim who say every possibility, which is why I'm asking. How would you, what strikes you as most likely? Yes?
A different answer, you probably yotze if you
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You know, make
So you're saying the Kiddush was good?
Yeah.
Okay.
But
Kiddush is always good, right? Yeah.
Don't do this,
right.
And you don't do it.
Right.
Problematic.
Problematic. Why? You saying because you violated an
Isser? You violated an Isser.
Okay. So there's certainly.
Right.
You're saying whether or not you want to go as far as using the mechanics of mitzvah habavi avera, either way, it seems more mistaber to say that if there's a prohibition to do it, ultimately it's not going to accomplish anything. Whether you formally because mitzvah habavi avera, or even without that, if we say, let's assume that Chazal have the authority to drain a mitzvah of its value. When would they use it? When would they not use it? So maybe they would use it when they're telling you it's forbidden for you to do something. Then it makes sense that they made the mitzvah null and void. But when it comes to kiddush, benching, there's no isser involved. So then maybe that's a different story. Anyone have a different angle on that? Or do you think that's the most likely angle? That's, okay, oh, I see. That's the real London, yeah?
I'll tell you to do it a certain way, so they're expecting the mitzvah now itself. So if you don't do the mitzvah, you don't do the mitzvah that way, then you haven't done any mitzvah.
Oh. Excellent. Okay, see, so that's a valid svar also. So you see, like you could be right to be on the Sanhedrin. You know, to be on the Sanhedrin, you have to be Matira Sharetz 49 different ways. So you just said two opposite svaras, which are both very valid svaras, and both have advocates within the Achronim to make distinctions along those lines. That there are those who would say it's hot in here, and those who would say I could cope with it and I could continue ignoring that. But a third possibility would be to address this question. So there are those. There are those who would say that the shofar on Shabbos is more likely to be nothing, and those who would say the kiddush is more likely to be nothing. And the explanations, the most prominent explanations in both cases, I think are like Avi said, either to say it's more compelling to say the shofar on Shabbos is nothing because Chazal prohibited it, so if they prohibited it, then why should they say there's still a mitzvah left? Assuming they have that authority, you're going to need an authority. You're still going to need them to have the power to make that decision. But if we assume they used it in one and not the other, maybe that's that. While there's also a svar to say the opposite, to say that when they redefine a mitzvah, the whole point of them redefining a mitzvah is to say, this is the way you got to do it. So it's no longer kiddush. Just to say Zohar Shem Shabbos L'Kadsho is no longer kiddush. Once upon a time it was, but not anymore. But when it comes to shofar and Shabbos, you pointed out very well, two different concepts. So the mitzvah of shofar is one thing, and you're not supposed to do it because of the problems of Shabbos, but it doesn't necessarily mean that shofar was redefined, because I think Israel's up first, then Alex.
Just maybe like another difference would be that shofar alone on Shabbos could be negated if you were to take precautions to not have to violate it, meaning if you had your shofar already in shul, you'd be able to blow shofar, so the Rabbanan's application really wouldn't apply, but by kiddush or benching, it's sort of like there's no real way to get around it. It's just there.
Well, but let's be more precise about that, because it's not true practically speaking, right? Because practically speaking, we don't blow a shofar even when we have the shofar with us. It's not that we're not being told that we're not allowed to carry to fulfill the mitzvah of the shofar. It's that we're being told that no matter what, we're not allowed to blow a shofar because we're afraid you might carry. But even under our circumstances where we generally don't need to carry because we generally have it, still we're not allowed to, which is part of the interesting thing about this gezeira is we'll see when we talk about it greater length. Alex?
Would we be able to say that an avera derabanan consider a mitzvah d'oraita mitzvah of avera or not?
So that's the question. We mentioned that question yesterday or the day before. So that's a question that some ask. And that's one possible angle here. We said it's another one of the backdoor angles a little bit because it doesn't require Chazal to have power to redefine a mitzvah. But it might be. And maybe you could say that because of the violation of Lo Sasser, if we assume that's what's at stake here, so then it's a mitzvah of Avera, and that's why. And that would give, again, a kind of a third approach. And that, if that's the logic, so then that would also work better for shofar and lulav, where you can argue there's an aveira there,
yeah,
as opposed to kiddush, where it doesn't seem like there's an aveira.
Well, wouldn't it also be even more qualified because I'm not going to say Tosos, so I don't want to say that you're not going to say at all. It just simply has to be aveiros, which, sorry, mitzvahs that
got to be the Aveira. It could just be there's an Aveira dug and also an attachment. I mean, it has to be.
But the Aveira here, the Aveira is not the Hotzah, the Aveira is the shofar blowing itself. Because since the rabbi said you're not allowed to do it, that becomes the Aveira. Right, so as opposed to Kiddush and benching, where we don't have any reason to think that that's present. So I want to share this. This is also just part of what we've seen in the past few minutes is how you can find logical approaches to issues that are equally reasonable and compelling, even if they take you to opposite places, and how one's instinct may vary from someone else's instinct in terms of what's more compelling. So just to share that. Anybody familiar with the Sefer? All right, this is a fascinating Sefer. Basically, what this is really, it's called Kavod HaKashesa. The Kavod HaKashesa is really 3 pages long.
What?
So this doesn't look like it's 3 pages long. And not only that, but see what it says over here? It's 3 volumes long. And there's 3 big books like this. So this is the commentary that turns a 3-page-long document into 3 big volumes. So the Kavod HaKashesa was written by the Chelkis Yoav. Chelkis Yoav, Rav Yoav Weingarten, was a Talmud of Yavne Nezer, one of the students of the Sefer Shavu Rebbe. And he wrote a Sefer of Shilas and Shuvas called Chelkis Yoav, that's why they call him that. And in the back, he has a section called Kavod HaKashesa, which is a few pages long. And Kava means a barrel of questions. But Kavin Gematria is 103, Kuf Beis Aleph. So it represents the 103 hardest questions. So it's the 103 questions that keep him up at night, that he cannot answer. So it's just a list of questions. And there's no answers there, it's just that in the back of the Chelkis Yoav, he has a list of 103 questions, says these are the bomb kashas there's no answer to. So obviously that's a dare when you say something like that, right? That's going to be a challenge. Once you put something like that out there in public, you're going to invite people to take you on. So indeed that has happened. So in the intervening few decades since he wrote this, so it looked in the early 1900s, so in the past century, many Svarim have either directly or indirectly said, those are fighting words, I'm taking that on. I'll take your challenge. And some have done so comprehensively. So you have entire Svarim, which are, for example, the Sefer called Shari Ziv, written by Rabbi Winograd. So he has, in his Sefer, he has the Kavod de Nechusa, the 103 answers. He addressed all the 103 questions. There are others, a Sefer Rav Nassim Gestetner wrote called the Luga de Terutza, that has 39 answers, Gematria of Luga, 39 answers to the question. So people have certainly taken this as a challenge and ran with it. So among them is a very prolific contemporary Talmud Chacham called, named by David Mandelbaum, who actually spoke here in Yeshiva a few weeks ago in the afternoon, and if anyone had a chance to go, spoke in Rishachter's Kolol a few weeks ago. So Rabbi Mandelbaum, who has produced many, many very fascinating Sfarim, so he decided that he's going to really bring the Kavod HaKashesa to the world. So he printed this big, huge 3-volume thing where he collected all the answers that anybody ever gave to any of the Kavod HaKashesas, anything that's in all the Svarim. And he generated a lot of answers also. So you'll see sometimes looking through the Shilas and Shuvas of some contemporary authors, they'll have a letter written to Rabbi Mandelbaum, "Oh, Be'inyan, you asked me to provide some answers of some of the Kavod HaKashesas, so here's a few answers." So he collected them all into this big 3-volume work. So this is volume 3. So I just want to share with you, you'll see perspective on this. Kasha Kushya 99, Sadites. 99 out of the list of 103 of the hardest kashas in the world, of the most bomb issues. So I won't read the whole thing. And again, he doesn't answer these questions. He just gives you a question. He says, you know, try ever sleeping again. And but his question here is a follow. I'll just read to you a little bit of it. It says, Ro'isi dover tamua. I have seen something astonishing. Lahagon Rebbe Kiva Eger. The great Rebbe Kiva Eger in Maracha Ches, in a Sefer Drush V'Chiddush, he says something which astonishing. What does he say? He says, the pshitalei, it's obvious to him, the imtaka shofar b'shabbos, if somebody blows shofar on Shabbos after Avar al Shvus, even though he violated the din d'rabbanan, we call makom ha mitzvah niskayim b'di'evet. Ayin shom. That Rekiva Eger's position on this is that he took it as simple and as obvious that there is still a mitzvah of shofar, even though it's prohibited to do this.
Maybe you'd rather have the rice
than just be only the. So you agree with the Rekiva Eger?
No, I'm saying I would take that trade, like maybe no
shofar. Oh, so you're saying, yeah. Oh, so you're saying that would be a problem, because how could you have people with such a choice? That relates a little bit to what we spoke about the other day. You're saying if the mitzvah still continues to be chai v'kayim, so then why is it the right thing to do to follow the chazal? You're trading the fulfillment of the mitzvah d'oraisa for observance of a d'rabbanan. That's an interesting point. You could say in a chanami, that's what you have to do to be a proper rabbinic Jew, that you shouldn't focus so much on schar, and you should focus on doing what's necessary to keep the religion stable. But it's an interesting point. Just parenthetically, because you mentioned this, you know, there is a fascinating discussion. There was another student of the Sacha Chavar. I mentioned the Chalkas Yov was a student of the Sacha Chavar. But another one was the Kadjik Lavarov. We mentioned Brayas here already, right? The Kadjik Lavarov, the Eretz Tzvi. So yeah, it was a fascinating approach to things. So there is a discussion, the Gemara in the first part of Shabbos, this is also just very relevant to what you're talking about. The Gemara in Daf Dalet and Shabbos talks about there's a prohibition that you're not allowed to take bread. They used to bake bread in a different way. The bread, when you would bake it, is kind of stuck to the wall of the oven, and you have a little bit of a process to take it off. It's called Ridiyas HaPas. It's interesting, actually, because the Gemara compares Ridiyas HaPas to blowing shofar in terms of the skill level. So it's just related in that point. But anyway, so you have to take the bread off the wall of the oven. And the Gemara says, Chazal prohibited that on Shabbos. You're not allowed to do that. So it's a prohibition midrabanan on Shabbos. So the Gemara asks, well, what happens if you started baking bread on Shabbos? It's a malacha. And then you realized you did shuv in the middle. You got very inspired very quickly, and somebody turned your life around. You went to a very inspiring lunch, and so now we're right in the middle. You want to unbake your bread, right? So you decide, okay, the bread's not baked yet. So let me take it out of the oven. Ah, but it's the rabbana. That's the rabbana to do that. But if you leave it in, you're going to violate Nisa Daraisa. So how do you address this question? Do we say, Chatei Kedei Sheyizke? The Gemara says, what if it's somebody else? Can you save somebody else from the Avera by violating the Yisra Rabbanan? It's called Chatei Kedei Sheyizke Chavercha. Or do we say for yourself, to save yourself from the Avera, say Chatei Kedei Sheyizke. Are you familiar with this Gemara? I see some people nodding. So the Kadjik Lavarov has a comment. He says, whatever the conclusion of this, he's interpreting a Tosus this way. That the Tosus that sounds like, well, maybe you can take the bread out, maybe you can't. But either way, you're not going to be chayiv skila. Right? You're not going to be in violation of skila for leaving the bread in. So why not? So it says the clutch cover, so I'll tell you why not. It says, because in general, we know that when you're chayiv misa for something, we know that tshuva doesn't help. That even though you say you're really sorry and you do all the process of tshuva, you're still going to be chayiv misa anyway. And the Achronim discuss why. You know, we believe in tshuva, right? We just came off of Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur and Rosh Hashanah Rabbah. We believe in tshuva. So why doesn't it work for Mrs. Bezdin? Why is it that if you do full tshuva after you are finished with the Aveira, why shouldn't that save you from the Onesh? So there are different explanations, but some say, though, the Behuda doesn't tshuva about this, some say that it's simply that we don't believe you, because everyone will claim they did tshuva if it's going to get them off of death row. So how do we know if we're going to say that we accept tshuva, we'll have to just cancel the whole concept of Mises Bezdin, because everyone will claim they've done tshuva. We have no way to know if it's really true, and the whole concept will disappear. So if we have a concept of Mises Bezdin, it must mean that we can't accept people's claims of tshuva. So says the Kadjik Lavar, says that's normally true. So normally you can't know whether somebody actually has done tshuva. But look at this situation, okay? Here, what did the guy do wrong? He's Mechal Shabbos d'oraisa, he baked bread. Now, he's so from that he won't even violate the Yisra d'Rabbanan. Right? So he's not even going to take bread out with d'Rabbanan. So clearly, he's done tshuva. He's even willing to risk his life to violate, to protect the Issa Drabanan of the same category, which he violated on the level of Minat Torah. So this is one case where we know he really has done tshuva. He's willing to let himself risk a chiyuv skila to fulfill the Drabanan in this case. So you see that he's clearly very on board now as far as this din. So that's a more extreme view of what Ariel is saying, that here he's talking about saving himself from death row. But even without that, if you have a mitzvah, there's really a schar mitzvah for shofar. So it's a tough choice we're giving to people, saying, sorry, give that up, so that you can observe the din d'rabbanan. Now, that tough choice part, as you may recall, that's a part of what Rabbi Chanan said is maybe where we get to Shev Al Tasa from, that we are in a tough position here with, if we assume that the mitzvah does still exist, whether or not you want to say it as actual schar, but if you say the mitzvah still does exist, that could explain why we take the Shev Al Tasa approach, because indeed we are very conflicted, that if the Torah really is telling us to do this, and Chazal are telling us not to, they put us in a tricky position, and that's why we only do this when it's passive behavior. Hi, Harrison.
Do you apply the concept of if you have two options of whether you allow that there run or something to I see you or something to I so do you apply that at all to our case to get a chauffeur? Say that like we're not sure if you can kind of the RSO by being over the
you could say it, but I don't think we need to, because we know that we're supposed to follow rabbinic law. So the question here is coming backwards, that so is there any mitzvah d'oraisa being that that's the case? So could it be there's still a mitzvah d'oraisa? So it's really we're asking the question backwards. And since we know what the answer is, we know that we're supposed to follow the rabbinic law, so if there's no mitzvah d'oraisa anyway, then it's clear. But could it be, is it something that we can accommodate in our heads at once, that we're not supposed to do it, we're supposed to pass up this opportunity, and yet the opportunity is still golden? That's the question that Dario's basically raising. So in any event, so now that would be your statement would be a good way to address also why Rabbi Kivager's position here is surprising here. Happens not to be the approach that Yisrael Kizyov takes a little more technical approach, as we'll read on here. But he says, this is Tamuwa, how could it be that Rabbi Kivager says, you blow shofar on Shabbos, you are in fulfillment of a mitzvah b'di'evit. So he continues to explain why this is so troubling. Because, not in the same way, but the way is a little more tactical. He says, Aval ma'od lapela. This is very, very shocking. Al gon kamoso, on a gon of his level. Shayoy medavr kazei could say such a thing. Unbelievable. Why, v'lomi boy, lahatosvis reish sukha gimel amin aleph. For sure, according to our Tosfos, the Tosfos on Gimel Amud Aleph and Sukkah, that kol hecha de mitzvah psula midrabanan gami d'oraisa lo yotza. All right, so we saw our Tosfos that says you're not yotza. So okay, for them, for sure, not like Rabbi Kivager. But maybe you'll say, wait, isn't there another opinion against Tosfos? Who else is there? And who have we seen? The Ran, right? What about the Ran? Nope, no good. Ach, af laharan soif psachim. Even according to the Ran, in the end of psachim, kuf tazayin. He's talking there, but the Quran makes a statement in both places. The Ran talking about the Mishnah of kol shomer shoshet bar me'elu. Even according to the Ran, the chaylek al Tosfos, who disagrees with Tosfos. Aval hecha de pachu chacham. So even according to him, hecha de pachu chachamim legamri min ha-mitzvah. When Chazal have said, you are exempt completely from a mitzvah. Right, which is different than the Sukkah situation. You say, okay, even if you want to take the Ran statement in Sukkah and by the Haggadah, okay, that's by Sukkah and Haggadah. But when they exempted you completely, they said, don't blow shofar today at all. Not blow shofar a certain way. Right? Not sit in the Sukkah a certain way, but don't blow shofar at all. So when they exempted you completely from the mitzvah, vadai neker ha-mitzvah mikol v'kol. Then you have to say the mitzvah has been uprooted completely. Kimo sadin b'tzitzis. Right, we discussed this yesterday. Like wearing shatnas and tzitzis. Where the Gemara says, Menachas memor alter maskel sadin. The custom of Menachas, talking about Tosfos over there. That lokach noka tabraisa potrin v'lo osrin. That the language of the braisa over there is putter rather than osr. To the Gamri Potter, because you're completely off the hook. The mitzvah's not there anymore. V'kihachi b'rash b'l'chatzitzis in the Zion, the Rash writes, to have a bracha l'batala, if one would make a bracha in such a case. V'lakach, kasav, again, all our other friends here, l'chach, this is good, this is one paragraph, v'chaz, there's so many of our marmakomos, l'chach, kasav, Rabbeinu Yonah, resh brachos, right, Rabbeinu Yonah that we just talked about, de'ein ol chayiv likrois klal achar chatzos. And when it comes to Kriyat Shema after Chatzos, you're not chayiv at all to do it. After Sham Leke Isser, and there it's even better because there's no Isser. But still, Chazal lets you off completely. Rak mitam hashas yivamas, because of the Gemara yivamas, diyesh koach biyad chachamim, la'akor ha-mitzvah b'sheva al-tasa, because Chazal have the authority to uproot a mitzvah. And just to go a little further in his words, he says, you can see also that this is not our attitude from certain principles in halacha. It says, Teida di lavkein, bisman hazesh, ein lana rishus harabin. This is a question we'll discuss. I said before we'll get a little bit more into the gzeira of shofar and luav, so we'll discuss this point. Mishnah Berurah raises this question. That according to some, nowadays we don't even have in our setups a rishus harabin min hatorah. We don't really have the ability to violate totzah min hatorah. So, if that's the case, let's take a lulav, let's forget about this gezeirah, let's do it anyway then if we don't have the risk of actually violating the iser. Like a woman is allowed to wear jewelry in public nowadays. So hagam diesh lidchas ksas. Okay, you could argue it's a little different. The sham hitiru teke pechatzer, that jewelry was always allowed on some level. Mashein came b'shofar d'lagamri osu af b'vayis. When it came to shofar, they prohibited it inside and outside. But why don't we change it nowadays? Why don't we say that we can blow shofar and take a lulav because there's no real risk? Because you see that what happened was the rabbis came and declared there is no more shofar on Shabbos, there is no more lulav on Shabbos. So even if circumstances are going to change, it doesn't matter because they took the mitzvah away. So even if our circumstances, if all of us are in circumstances where the risk is no longer there, maybe the mitzvah no longer continues to apply. So the chayn muchach. There are other indications. Now we have a principle that there's no shvus, there's no rabbinic prohibitions during the time of Bein HaShmashos. So why don't we say on Rosh Hashanah, here's our Eitzah, that let's blow shofar during the Bein HaShmashos time, and that way we won't violate an Issa D'Rabbanan, and let's do it then. So apparently we're not looking for such solutions. Because the mitzvah is gone, there's no more mitzvah of shofar, there's no more mitzvah of lulav, all of this shows that. So, he ends off on the words here, I'm skipping to the end, says, Divrei Hagoyin Rabbi Akiva Eger Tamua Me'od. The words of Rabbi Akiva Eger are astonishing to me in the extreme, and no one can answer this question. So, it says Rabbi Mandelbaum, no one except for the people quoted over the next 30 pages. And from page Shin Lamed Zayin to Shin Ayin Beis. So that's 45 pages. No, that's 35 pages of responses that he has here to this question. So it makes for a fascinating reading. We will not be going through all the 35 pages with you. But just to be aware, so this is part of the discussion. And again, you see from his whole approach that one can have an instinct very much in one direction, instinct very much in another direction, and that's a part of the beauty of all the madrigas here, that here Rabbi Eger took it as Pasha, the mitzvah does exist, and Kavd Kashesa thinks it's so Pasha not that way, that the very statement creates a conundrum wrapped in a mystery, wrapped in an enigma that will never be answered until Mashiach comes. Yes.
Could Rabbi Akiva Eger maybe be motivated by the fact that Batos is Matejo? You know, he can't, like, for example, Navi, he says he's allowed to say, oh, this mitzvah doesn't apply at this circumstance. But once he says that, it doesn't, like, once he says it takes it away, mm-hmm. then he says another shaker automatically that he can't do that. It's Batos, so similarly here, that maybe come can't really do that and say that it never applies. We can't really just take away the mitzvah like that.
So you could say that, but you know, maybe we can make the same points in a more straightforward way and just say, like we've been saying from the beginning, that maybe what's motivating Rabbi Akiva Eiger here is that there is a basic discomfort as to how much power could we possibly give the rabbis. If the Torah is divine, and if the Torah reflects an eternal reality, so then where can the authority come that rabbinical figures can show up and say that it no longer applies the same way? So that question is something that we will have to address, because the truth is, I think this entire issue is actually rooted in a discussion that exists on a different level that addresses the whole nature of rabbinic authority.
But I'm asking, what's the principle?
Well, because the Torah is eternal, right? And the Torah is so.
Yeah, he's allowed to, let's say, by Eliyahu, he's allowed to say that you can have Mizbeach
HaTzeh
Yerushalayim
at that time. Right,
Harasha. Yeah, so there are plenty of cases where we see that there are
lines. Harasha, right? And Chazal can do that also, Harasha. Right. They can do that for a given time. But to tell you forever, you know, that's certainly quite surprising. And that's something that we fight against when it happens outside of Orthodoxy, right? We say that that's part of the definition of what we believe as Orthodox Jews, that the Torah is eternal. Now, I once discussed the sugya with a prominent Talmud Chacham not in the YU world, and he told me, like he said, about this position. He said about the position of mitzvah is not there anymore. The sugya, he said, so why is that not Reformed Judaism? How do you not have a big problem with that, with saying that you can rewrite the Torah, even if it seems like it's coming from a different direction? The result is certainly one that's surprising. So the truth is, I think this question, and I'm surprised by the fact that this point I'm about to say, or about to allude to, is actually not expressed so clearly in Sfarim, but I think it's true nonetheless. I think it's very compellingly true, that this whole question of what exactly happens in these situations, do the mitzvos get deprived of their mitzvah quality because of the rabbinic enactment or not, that this is really the identical machlokas to a machlokas that we find at the very core of how mitzvahs d'rabbanan work. And that is something we'll have to explain next time. But just to keep you really not sleeping for a couple days, but I want to do this for the next few minutes. I'll mention one more nafka mina here, and because the other point is going to take much longer, and then maybe we'll review, because we said a lot, and then we'll daven, and we'll continue next time. Tomorrow, of course, tomorrow is a Pak Shvi. Tomorrow has the whole extra section of Parshas Noach, and it's the whole post-diluvian discussion. Everything after the flood is in Shvi, so there's a lot to talk about. But okay, we have a lot ahead of us. But just one practical nafkamina of this question that was discussed. What happens if somebody takes a lulav on the first day of Sukkot? So then, on the second day of Sukkot, everyone in shul... The first day of Sukkot is Shabbos in this case, otherwise it wouldn't be interesting. First day of Sukkot is Shabbos, so somebody, despite the rabbinic prohibition, he takes a lulav. And then meanwhile, everyone else in shul is not doing that because it's Shabbos. And then the second day, everyone takes it for the first time, and they make a shachiyano. Right? The only day they make a shachiyano on the lulav is the first day. So do you do this also if you also took it the first day? So that's the same question, right? Do we say that there was a mitzvah even though you weren't supposed to be doing it? Or do we say, no, there's no mitzvah at all, it's worthless. And therefore, just like everyone else is making a shachiyano because this is their first time taking lulav, so too, you'll also make a shachiyano because what you did yesterday was garnished, doesn't count for anything because it was in violation of rabbinic prohibition. Okay, so far so good? All right, so I will recap because we mentioned a lot of points today, and then just to give a picture of what's ahead. So this major issue at the heart of all Dinei D'Rabbanan that I think explains everything, that's what we'll start with next time. If we have time, maybe we'll also pursue some of the other issues in Rabbi Chanan's question, like the issue of Sheva Al Tasa and the like. And we also want to talk about a little bit more about the gzeira of not taking a lulav and why that gzeira was made, etc., etc. So that's still on our agenda. But just to recap, we spoke about today. So we went a little further with this question of whether deraisas get erased by drabanans that conflict with them. We mentioned that the Rabbeinu Yonah has the example that's different from really everything that came before. The question of, can you fulfill the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema after Chatzos? We said it's really not a practical question at all, because first of all, practically speaking, no matter what, if we find ourselves after Chatzos, we're going to say Kriyat Shema, and if we find ourselves before Chatzos, we're not going to wait till after Chatzos. That's true halacha no matter what. And even according to Rabbeinu Yonah, it's not really relevant, because he was explaining the position that he says he doesn't paskin like. The view of Chachamim, according to him, was that the impact of such a gzeira was to negate the mitzvah afterwards. And we discussed it's different, because first of all, it's to protect its own self. It's not like blowing shofar on Shabbos, which is to protect Shabbos at the expense of shofar, but this is all to protect Kriyat Shema. There's a discussion, by the way, in general, at the beginning of the commentaries, the beginning of Brachos discuss, that it's surprising to even talk about a gzeira by Kriyat Shema is surprising, because there is an attitude that maybe gzeiras only apply or only invoked to protect Yisurim. Now, why would that be true? So this is something we haven't discussed yet at all, that Lo Sasser might be the source for the power of Chazal to make gezeiras. What's the source for the motivation of Chazal to make gezeiras? You know the answer to that one? It's a pasuk in Achrimos. That's a pasuk in Achrimos says, "Ushmartem es mishmarti." You should protect my mishmeres. And the Gemara Maseches Yevamos reads that to mean, Asu mishmeres l'mishmarti. You should make a protection to my mishmeres. So a mishmeres is probably, as many understand, the language of a losase. Because the Gemara says one of the languages, the Torah has four different languages it uses for prohibitions. Hishamer, lav, pen, and al. So hishamer is one of them. So the Torah says hishamer from doing this, it means it's a prohibition. So mishmeres is an iser. So shmartem is mishmarti. It could mean that you should make gzeiras to protect my losases. So the fact that there could be a gzeira by Kriyat Shema is already interesting, as the mitzvah says. Some suggest that that just reflects the unique importance of Kriyat Shema as the pledge of allegiance to God, to the Torah, but whatever it is, it's an interesting fact to begin with. And Rabbeinu Yonah suggests, going even farther with it, that it's a unique gzeira that nullifies itself to protect itself. It's like the breaking of the luchos. Right, the bitula hikiyuma, that it destroys itself to protect itself, and therefore it self-destructs after chatzos. So Shakasari argued on it, and Moshe Feinstein argued on it. It's an interesting discussion. We talked about different ways to understand what even the logic is. And then I asked you, okay, when all the different examples, we could at least break them down into two categories, more, but at least two. So we gave the example of blowing shofar on Shabbos, taking a little on Shabbos in one category, or Kiddush and benching, where you have mitzvah saseh that the rabbi is enhanced. So in both cases, let's ask the question, if you don't follow rabbinic law, are you yotzei mitzvah? If you make Kiddush without makom suda, let's say, over here, or if you blow shofar on Shabbos over here, are you fulfilling any mitzvah? And I asked you, do you think the answer is the same for both? And if it's different, how is it different? And as we saw, there are compelling reasons to distinguish in both directions. That's a compelling reason to say that shofar on Shabbos is nothing, as opposed to Kiddush, because if the rabbis prohibited it, then they're really saying don't do it. And like Ariel raised the question, they're going to prohibit it and then leave you with all this value to get. It's a little hard to believe. As opposed to Kiddush, where there's no prohibition involved, so maybe there still exists a mitzvah on some level. Or alternatively, one could say the opposite. One could say that when it comes to Kiddush and benching, the rabbis redefine the mitzvah. The whole point of redefining the mitzvah is to leave the old version in the dust. But when it comes to shofar, they didn't redefine shofar. They just said don't do it at all because of its danger for Shabbos, but maybe the mitzvah itself was left untouched. So I saw that you could have opposite instincts on this question. And then we saw an example of these opposite instincts in the language of the Kavita Kashayis, the Chalkas Yoav, who says that on the one hand, Kiva Eger, the great Gaon, took it for granted that there still is a mitzvah with shofar on Shabbos. And I think it's so hard to understand that it's a kashin of itself. It's just impossible. And to prove that it's not the case, he says that there are situations where it would seem like we don't have a risk of carrying on Shabbos, and yet we don't try to find a way to make shofar happen during that time, because the mitzvah was completely uprooted, like you find by tzitzis and shatnez, that if one were to make a bracha, be a bracha levatala, the whole mitzvah is gone, doesn't exist. So this just shows a very different attitude, and we had mentioned that the Sefer has 35 pages of responses to that question, and how one could have many different attitudes towards this. And we noted also, we had some discussions about Hefker, Bezen, Hefker that was brought up. We discussed how Hefker, Bezen, Hefker, the ability of Chazal, and maybe even contemporary rabbis possibly, to nullify the value of money or to reassign the ownership of money, could be a backdoor approach to some of these questions. Could explain how, for example, Prusbul could work, or rather Shemitah Drabbanon could work, because maybe that's just a monetary issue that could be affected in such a way. It could explain how Chazal could nullify marriages that were carried out through Shavu Kesef. It could explain even Sukkah, according to the explanation mentioned the other day. But all of these are roundabout explanations, ways that don't require us to actually take a stand and say that Chazal have the ability to negate mitzvos head on. And then we discussed also, parenthetically, that whole Kajal approach to why Tosfos says in Shabbos that if you fulfill the mitzvah d'rabbanan and if you observe the mitzvah d'rabbanan not to take the bread out of the oven and leave the bread to bake in the oven, you're not going to be chayiv skila, because it's clear that you've done tshuva for the aver of chil Shabbos, because you're sacrificing your shmir Shabbos d'raisa for the observance of the d'rabbanan, which was evocative of Ariel's question that if the mitzvah still exists, how could it be that we would feel comfortable not performing it, as Chazal tell us. But on the other hand, the big discomfort that we have here is how could it be that the Chazal have the ability to affect the content of the Torah? That's something which we find very unsettling, and we indicated that perhaps this whole issue is really reflective of a different debate that we find as far as how Din and Rabbanan work, and God willing, that's next up on our agenda. Okay, so one of the mitzvahs to Rabbanan that we have is to daven mincha. The Rambam says the mitzvah to daven every day. So the mitzvah to daven every day, according to the Rambam, but even he would agree that three tefillos a day in a structure is Rabbanan. So if you daven shacharis this morning already, then
definitely Rabbanan.